So today in the program, we learned about the Massachusetts Cannabis Control Commission and specifically about their social equity program from Commissioner Kimberly Roy and also Quincy resident and business owner Devin Alexander. So welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Really interesting to learn about, Kimberly, this business and about the commission itself. So cannabis in Massachusetts has been legal now since 2016, right? It's been quite a while, actually. Yeah,
it has.
Has the commission been in existence since the new law was approved in Massachusetts?
So you were accurate in saying that the will of the voters, the people spoke and voted in 2016 to legalize adult use cannabis in Massachusetts. What resulted from that vote was the legislature drafted legislation, and the governor and the legislature created the Cannabis Control Commission. Okay. It consists of five commissioners. We all sit in a designated seat. I sit in the public health seat. I was appointed by former Governor Charlie Baker. And even though we have a designated lane, if you will, we tackle all things cannabis. We have a social equity seat, a public safety seat, there's the chair, and then there's a fine industry seat. But we are mandated, and we took an oath to uphold public safety and public welfare and public health when it comes to the cannabis industry. We want folks to know that this is a highly regulated industry, and that when they do go in to a dispensary or they get their products delivered to their homes, that the products are safe. They've been highly tested, and that sets the legal market apart from the legacy market. The Cannabis Control Commission is headquartered in Worcester. I think we are the only state agency actually to have our headquarters in Worcester. We have a satellite office in Boston. Mm-hmm. But we cover the entire state in regulating cannabis. Right now, there are over 300 and around 350 retailers. The list is fluid. It changes all the time. Over 100 product manufacturers and 16 independent testing labs. We also have cultivators. So we have a number of license types, if you will, that we also regulate. What commissioners do, and again, there's five of us, is that we create policy. We create regulation. We edit them when necessary. Mm-hmm. Chapter 180 passed in 2022. The governor signed it into law, and that brought more equity into the cannabis industry. And the commission had 1 year to promulgate that legislation into regulation. So there's a lot of things that are evolving and are exciting that are happening in cannabis industry right now. And you know, to sit here with Devin, a great honor for me to be here with him. He's a social equity participant, and I believe EEA as well, or?
Just social equity.
Social equity participant, yes. Who's gone through the program. What a success story he is. He's becoming quite the face and celebrity in the cannabis industry in Massachusetts. I had the honor to be with Devin in the State House a little over a week ago, where Governor Moore Healey was the first governor in the nation to do a blanket pardon for marijuana misdemeanor convictions. Mm-hmm. And according to her records, the State House, it's going to impact over 100,000 people. Devin was a featured speaker there, and he talked about his story and how social equity in Massachusetts was the first state in the country to mandate it. We are mandated to incorporate equity into our mission, into our regulations, into our programming, to make sure that we have a robust license type. And Devin spoke about how marijuana prohibition impacted him and his life, and how he wanted to get into the military, right, Devin? And you shared that story with us, and that because of that, it caused him to go down a different path and have to take different options in life.
Right.
But the cannabis industry now, he's got a successful, thriving business, and we're real proud of him. And he's really been able to talk about how this industry has helped him. And he's paying it forward by sharing his story and what he's able to do. So we're real proud of our mandate, our equity mandate, and other states have since followed suit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you wanted to know a little bit about the social equity program as well.
Yeah, I guess my question is, why is a social equity program needed in the cannabis industry specifically?
Sure.
You know, as opposed to any other industry.
So, a little fun fact that cannabis is the top crop in Massachusetts
really?
Now. It outpaces cranberries. It creates hundreds of millions of dollars in excise tax that go to the marijuana regulation fund. Over 30,000 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an economic driver.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still federally illegal.
Mm-hmm.
It's Schedule I. And with that creates barriers. So there's no banking, if you will. You can't go to the corner bank and get a small business loan. There's no bankruptcy protections for folks in the cannabis industry. There's something called 280E, which, because it's Schedule 1, folks like Devin can't take ordinary business deductions on their taxes, and that inflates to profits. Mm-hmm. So there's real barriers. And the biggest one we find is access to capital for folks like Devin who want to get into the industry. So what the social equity program does is it avails different opportunities. If you apply, we have it right now, we have our fourth cohort. So over 800 folks have gone through this program at the commission. And if you have to meet certain requirements to get in, residency requirements, if you're criminally justice involved in the past, mm-hmm. or you had a spouse or a parent that was, so there's certain criteria to get accepted into the program. But once you are, we provide curriculum. We recently came out with advanced core curricula, different technical assistance. We waive fees, which can be quite costly in all honesty, and you get prioritization in the queue. You also get exclusive license type access, like delivery, which Devin is, social consumption, which is still in its development. They're still creating the framework on that. Mm-hmm. There's certain businesses where you have an exclusive license type for up to 3 years. So those are different things that are available to social equity participants. In addition to that, we found capital was really a huge barrier. It can cost upwards over $1 million to open a retail store, and we're talking multi-millions to open a cultivation. Mm-hmm. And you mm-hmm. can't go to a bank, like I shared with you, and sometimes there's predatory lending that goes on. So we heard from folks, and they really advocated, wanted for a social equity trust fund. So the commission unanimously in 2021 voted to support that initiative, and we advocated to the legislature to establish that based on the taxes that we receive mm-hmm. in that marijuana regulation fund. So now the great news is the legislature passed it, and it is established, and it's under the Executive Office of Economic Development. It's not under the commission, though we do work with them to help when they ask questions that we can help them with. We do that. So folks are starting to apply now to get no interest and zero interest grants and loans from this fund, which will help a lot of folks. And what we want at the end of the day is we want meaningful participation from people of color and communities that were impacted by the war on drugs, by marijuana prohibition. We want to encourage meaningful participation by women and veterans. So we try to avail these opportunities. This is a tremendous industry in Massachusetts, but there are, due to federal illegality, there's tremendous barriers as well. So sure. What can we do to help alleviate some of those?
Yeah, although the federal regulations apply to everybody, right, in Massachusetts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's a legal industry in Massachusetts, so yes. You can purchase it at a regulated dispensary. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But what it really impacts is the business owners mm-hmm. who cannot access capital,
yeah.
who cannot file for bankruptcy protections if they need it, cannot deduct ordinary business expenses on their taxes.
Right.
There's a lot of impacts that have happened.
So who would not be eligible to apply for the SEP program?
So folks that don't fall in the criteria okay. that I laid out with
okay.
you, it's really set aside for especially communities that have been disproportionately impacted. And what we mean by that is the commission has 30 identified communities,
okay.
Quincy being one of them,
okay?
Okay? That there were higher rates of incarceration and arrest mm-hmm. due to marijuana prohibition.
Okay.
So how can we, in turn, positively impact those communities? Another aspect is, and Devin knows this quite well, is when you go for your renewal and even during your application process, mm-hmm. you have to demonstrate to us that you're going to positively impact mm-hmm. your community with it's called Positive Impact Plan, and you have to have a diversity plan to show that you're going to make every best effort mm-hmm. to have a diverse workforce at your establishment.
Okay.
So those are requirements, and the commissioners
okay.
look at those, and if we say, it's not quite robust robust enough, we'll put a condition on that, asking for a little bit more information or maybe asking you to do a little bit more steps along the way.
Okay, so those are pretty strict, actually, more so than you know, anybody else trying to open up a convenience store somewhere or something.
I would agree with that,
So, Devin, it really benefited you then in the long run. You're now a business owner yourself. How did that happen?
Well, I really didn't know too much about it until I started working in the legal industry at a previous dispensary known as Irmont at the time. It was the seventh medical marijuana dispensary to come online in the state.
Right here in Quincy. So,
right here in Quincy.
Sure.
It was very popular at the time. So all the medical marijuana facilities, they have to be what's called vertically integrated, which means they have to have their cultivation, their retail, their product manufacturing all under one roof.
Right.
And, you know, as part of the application process, you have to have $500,000 in escrow. So, you know, there's a very limited number of people that I able to open up right off the bat.
Yes.
But, you know, I got my experience working there, started going to more industry events, and I missed out on the window to become certified as an economic empowerment applicant. So I found it, you know, very vital that I had to participate in the social equity program. So I had to prove to them that I lived in Quincy, you know, for the majority of my whole life. I've never lived anywhere else in America, in the world, but Quincy. So I went down to the city clerk, and I had her print me out a notice saying that Devin Alexander has lived there for a number of years. And then that notice, I submitted that to the Cannabis Control Commission, and that's how I gained entry into the social equity program. And as Commissioner Roy alluded to, you know, having exclusive access to a delivery license has been very beneficial.
Really? What would you have done had you not gone down that route?
I guess we'll never know.
Yeah. Okay. But you, I mean, you've become, as Commissioner said, you know, a vocal advocate, not only for this industry, but also for folks who have a story like yours that may have been prohibited elsewhere from getting into this business.
Yeah.
Why are you so passionate about it?
I just believe in it.
Yeah.
I've been around cannabis for the majority of my life. You know, I've never seen it as a bad thing to me, you know, even though it was heavily destigmatized with the DARE program. So I've seen it, you know, working firsthand. Before I worked in the marijuana dispensary, I used to work as a pharmacy tech at CVS, as a pharmacy technician. So I would see people taking all these prescription drugs and opioids, and it was just really deteriorating their, you know, lifestyle. Funny enough, the dispensary I ended up working at was not too far away from there. So I would see the same people at the pharmacy that I was seeing in the dispensary, and they would tell me, Devin, you know, now that I have access to medical marijuana, medical cannabis, I've been able to reduce the intake of opioids and other prescription drugs. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah. So what kind of training did you have to go through in order to be, I know you like to call yourself a bud tender?
Correct,
bud tender?
To be a bud tender.
Yeah.
Really, being a pharmacy tech helped me excel as a bud tender, because those skills were very easily transferable.
Yes.
You know, working in a patient setting, having strict attention to detail, and just being compassionate. It made me grow up quickly working in a pharmacy, because you're dealing with people's health, you're dealing with their money, and you don't know what somebody's going through. You know, they'll be like, it could be a very hostile environment in some cases, right? But, you know. So having all that training and then combining, you know, just regular training, they didn't have responsible vendor training program yet at that point in time. Now with the adult use market, that's required for all license types.
Oh,
so you
okay.
have to, you know, do like 8 hours annually of responsible vendor training, and the commission designates these responsible vendor trainers. So they had their own program at the dispensary, and it was really just strain knowledge, terpene knowledge, and you couldn't say anything like, couldn't like make, hey, this is definitely going to help you, this is going to cure you. You're not a doctor,
right?
So you can't make claims like that.
Okay. So how did you go from that to being now a CEO of your own company?
Really, I'll be honest with you, just seeing the people behind the scenes and seeing that they didn't really know what they were doing and they weren't too passionate about it. When I worked in the pharmacy, I had two bosses, you know, two women. One was like good cop, bad cop. One was talked to me like I was his son. The other one was very, very hard on me. Mm. And I went to pharmacy school for many years. Mm-hmm. Anything you ask of me, no problem. You're the expert. I get to the dispensary. These people were working at H&R Block last year. Mm-hmm. I've been selling weed since I was 14 years old. I'm way more. I know the game. I know the industry. So combine that with just having the support of being here locally, you know, it was really my mom as well. Me and my mother are 16 years apart in age, so we're very close. So having that support from her really the final straw, all I needed. If my mother has my back, it's a wrap.
Yeah, yeah. But tell me the whole process of forming a business, especially under the social equity program, through the Cannabis Control Commission, and how, you know, how that worked, the mechanics of it, and where it brought you to today.
Well, at first, we wanted to form what's called a micro business. So a micro business is the only license type that has a residency requirement. You have to live in Massachusetts for a full calendar year before you can obtain a micro business license.
Okay.
You know, they're trying to work to improve the license right now, currently, but, you know, previously, they cap you, right? So Massachusetts is a limited license state. So if you want to have a dispensary, you only have 3 dispensaries. If you want to do product manufacturing, 3. Cultivation, you know. But for micro business, you can only have that 1 micro business.
Okay.
So if you're social equity certified, you can apply for what's called a delivery endorsement, which means you can deliver the products that you produce at that micro business. So investors want to see room for growth, right? So a lot, combine that with the exclusive window starting for delivery, I didn't want to miss out on that. We were originally going to be called a micro business called South Shore Greenery, and Rolling Relief was going to be our delivery wing. So I focused all my attention on delivery and just became solely Rolling Relief. So obviously, my business partner is somebody who I met when I was in high school. You know, we've been known since we were 14 years old.
Is that right?
His name's Bryce Hall, and he worked at a cannabis business in Fall River called Northeast Alternatives. He does a lot of the chef stuff. You know, Quincy High is at Voc Tech School.
Sure.
He was part of the culinary program, went to Le Cordon Bleu.
Oh, okay.
He was the executive chef at Temple Bar in Cambridge.
Huh.
But then the pandemic happens,
yes.
A lot of stuff shuts down, delivery becomes an all-time premium.
Certainly, yeah.
So
everybody was having everything delivered at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So once we had the name, it was a social equity program, right? So we're taking classes that teach you, you know, how to set up an LLC, business plan creation, you know, marketing, advertising. And it's being taught by people who've been there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're taking classes with people who are all at different parts in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have already obtained a license, some people are halfway there, some people are just freshly starting out. So getting that support and having that camaraderie is everything, right? Especially back before the pandemic hit, we were taking classes in person.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really that you had Institute of Higher Learning, no pun intended,
right.
and it's really just good stuff, you know, also that. So the first step was, you know, forming the LLC. So you go to the Secretary of the Commonwealth, you pay $500, you tell them what the point of that LLC is.
Yes.
Okay, boom. You have your LLC established. Now, once you get your LLC established, you have to get what's called an EIN, an Employee Identification Number. It's basically a social security number for businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have that, you can open up a business bank account. You open up the business bank account, you start, you know, you start getting legitimate now, you start accepting funding, you have debit cards. So then you have to find suitable commercial real estate in a city or town that allows for cannabis businesses.
Yes.
So when Massachusetts legalized cannabis back in 2016 with Question 4, they gave a lot of power to the municipalities. So what they did was they went city by town, and if a majority of the residents in that city or town voted yes on Question 4, cannabis is done.
Yes.
It's good, you can legalize it. But if it's vice versa, they can put a moratorium or a ban in place.
Yes.
So, you know, that limits the areas where you can set up shop.
Sure.
So that's the first piece of the puzzle, finding where you can go. And then you have to find suitable commercial real estate that's properly zoned. Most of the time it's going to be an industrial park.
Yes, as the case here in Quincy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you have to have the landlord be cool to rent out to you.
Yeah.
Because cannabis is still federally illegal.
Right.
And if they're financing their building through the bank, they can run into some issues there.
Community agreement.
Exactly. But and then also, there's what's called the green tax, right? So when we were looking through properties, what we would do is we would look on loopnet.com. We would go look all this stuff. We would send off the address to our attorneys, like, hey, is this compliant? Does this meet all the local bylaws and ordinances? And then we would, you know, reach out to the landlord. You know, sometimes we would see listings, it would say like $3,500, and then we would tell them, hey, we're a cannabis business. Oh, like, oh, okay. $7,000.
Okay.
You know, they automatically assume that you're out here printing money,
yes,
because you're a cannabis business.
I see.
And so I've seen some cases where, you know, landlords want equity in the business on top of them paying rent. So this is a very tough industry to navigate.
Yeah.
Very volatile. So you have to have a lot lining up for you. And then, as Commissioner Roy just said, you have to obtain what's called the host community agreement. So a host community agreement is the contract between the cannabis business and the municipality that they're operating in. Previously, they were 5 years, but thanks to the passing of Chapter 180, they've now extended to up to 8 years. And they were kind of nefarious, you know, before the commission was able to step in. It wasn't always the case. So in some cases, they were used as a tool for extortion for cannabis companies. They would say, if you want this host community agreement, you're going to have to make a charitable donation to a certain nonprofit, buy them a police cruiser, build them a playground.
Really?
In the city of Fall River, way back when, I just want to say 2021, you have their ex-mayor, you know, asking for hundreds of thousands of dollars and, you know, pounds of smokable cannabis flower. The Fed stepped in, he's now in federal prison.
Right. Yep.
And now, with the passage of Chapter 180, the Cannabis Control Commission now has oversight of these agreements.
Okay.
And they just recently, you know, published a template that's going to be used all across the board. Everyone's host community agreement moving forward is going to look the same. You're not going to have people say, give me this, give me that, donate that. Then they have what are called community impact fees. These are fees to offset, you know, the troubles that the municipality has by you operating there. Previously, people weren't documenting these fees. They were just throwing out, it's like, take a number out of a hat.
I see.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars, I'm going to need this check. They have to document these now.
Okay.
You know, that's what the commission thankfully stepped in and did, and they set the, you know, because like people were just getting...
Sounded like it was the Wild Wild West.
Yeah, it was. It was.
So part of the equity law, the Chapter 180, was around host community agreements. And they were in existence, as Devin said, but there was no oversight. Mm-hmm. It really was the Wild West. Mm. And a lot of these were contracts of adhesion where the playing field wasn't leveled. If you're an entity just starting out and you really have no leverage to negotiate. And so I read many of them. And quite frankly, some of them were quite egregious. Mm. And so what we did, based on the new law, was now the commission, as Devin alluded to, we call balls and strikes on these things now, whether they're in compliance or not in compliance. We look at the community impact fees. We have a definition. It has to have a direct nexus in imposing an impact on a community of their goods and services. And you need to demonstrate that. In the past, as a commissioner, I didn't know where any of the money was being spent. No one could get a receipt, or very few people could get a receipt. So now, and I was on the working group for the host community agreements, and we even put in the regulation sunshine requirement, because the best disinfectant is sunshine, and we want transparency in government is so critical and so important. And people need to know where this money is going. So now they will be an itemized receipt, if you will, a bill for impacts created, direct impacts created by the entity. Now, they have to demonstrate that. In the past, as Devin said, they did not have to do that. So we really leveled the playing field. So this way, they have to follow, this is law, they have to follow the law. And there we eliminated things like upfront payments, extra donations, extra payments. That's gone. Those days are gone now. Okay. And there is a model template which folks can use.
So does a community have to come before the commission to get that approved?
Yes, both do. So the two parties are the municipality and the licensee.
The business,
and those are the parties in the contract, the agreement. And that has to come before us, and we will deem whether it is compliant and follows the law.
Okay, all right. So does that level the playing field in your eyes?
Yeah, I think so, because previously, you know, someone that isn't well-funded like myself cannot, you know, meet these requests. And what certain municipalities did is they limited the amount of these agreements they handed out. They put a cap on them, right? And that's where even more nasty stuff can come in, because if you're not willing to do it, go find someone that's going to.
I see, okay.
And another layer to the law is municipal equity. So by law, the commission was mandated to have equity in our mission, but municipalities were not. But now, by law, they will be, and processes need to be in place, and they need to demonstrate to the commission that they are. So if they have, let's say, you know, X amount of more licenses to give out, they have to incorporate equity applicants, SCP, EEA, social equity businesses into their opportunity to have a license in that community, where there was no regulation over that in the past. So that is also new.
Okay. Is there a cap? Is there a limit on the number of social equity program licenses that the commission will grant?
No. Okay. We have applicants now. We also have different tracks. So not everybody wants to be a licensee. So in the social equity program, there's the entrepreneurial track, like Devin, right? Mm-hmm. He is the CEO of his business. Mm-hmm. Some folks just want to be in management there.
Oh.
And other folks want to stay as a budtender, entry level. And we teach those skills as well. And then there's a fourth track, which is really kind of really interesting one. It's called the ancillary track. And if for those of us that went to NECAN, which is a huge conference, and it was in Boston last week, you go into the Heinz Convention Center and you see a football field full of innovation and inventions around cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are plant touching, some of them are non-plant touching, but that's that ancillary track. And that's also, I mean, there's so many inventions.
Potential for it, 100%.
Right?
Because
yeah.
one of the oldest things people say in the cannabis industry, you know, when the gold rush happened, who were people that made all the money? The ones selling the pickaxes, right?
Yeah, and so very few hit struck
and
rich.
When you don't, so you don't have to deal with 280E, having to wait 3 years to get a license mm-hmm. when you're in ancillary business. You can have these business credit cards. You can do all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that definitely deserves more attention. You don't have to have a license, have a dispensary to make an impact in the industry. To have, you know, make a good living in the industry mm-hmm. as well.
The technology, Devin, involved mm-hmm. in cannabis, whether it's odor mitigation or whether it's horticulture with soil mm-hmm. and everything else, there's so much innovation in the industry, and you see it when you attend these conferences.
Commissioner, is there a cap on the number of licenses that a community can grant?
Well, in the cannabis industry, it's really, as Devin alluded to, around local control
okay.
around that. So that's really okay. for the city of Quincy, right?
Correct.
It's up to them, really.
And they figure it out by the number of liquor stores we have,
percentage.
Right? That's where they come up with the number. Mm-hmm. If you have a certain amount of liquor stores in your city or town, then you, by law, have to have this amount of dispensaries.
I see. Okay. All right. So for your part, Devin, for somebody watching, considering getting into the cannabis industry, what's some advice for them?
Don't give up.
Don't give up.
You have to have tough skin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not someone that's willing to put in the work and, you know, willing to accept constructive criticism, you're not going to go anywhere. And for the social equity program, too,
mm-hmm.
you know, what I compare it to is fishing, right? The social equity program doesn't guarantee you a license at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, could say it's like a very nice fishing rod. As compared to a general applicant who has no fishing rod at all,
mm-hmm.
who is out there just getting stuff with their hands, you know, you have a better chance of catching the fish with the fishing rod, but it's not guaranteed.
If you qualify
for a social equity program,
right?
So just because you get in, you're still going to have to put in the work.
Yep.
You're still going to have to write your business plan. You're still going to have to go do community outreach meetings,
yep.
you know, come up with positive impact plans, and you're going to have to spend time. You have to put in a lot of effort, man. This is the hardest thing I ever did in my entire life.
Is that right?
Hands down. I never owned a business before.
Sure.
You know, I was never even a manager before at any job that I had.
Mm-hmm.
I went from being a bud tender to a CEO.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a huge jump. And it's just taken a lot of willingness to learn. You know, willingness to step back and look and see. Well, you don't know it all,
mm-hmm.
right? You have to identify your strengths, identify your weaknesses, and surround yourself with people whose strengths are your weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And it is quite a journey, and you do have to be resilient. It's not just a matter of filling out an application and crossing your fingers and hoping you're approved by the commission.
Right.
There really is a process, like, and the commission has improved greatly since its inception, a turnaround time, but we may come back to you requesting more information.
Okay.
You have to go through background checks to be in the industry,
mm.
although in Chapter 180, we've relaxed the suitability because we had standards on if you were suitable for the industry, and now we want to have more inclusive industry, so we've really relaxed some of those barriers around suitability. But you have to get a what's called a provisional license that comes before the five commissioners to approve that, and then you get a post-provisional license inspection, and then you go for a final license that comes before us, and commissioners may add conditions
okay.
on there, and then you have to have a final license inspection before you can bring product in
right.
and then get that golden ticket, if you will, commence operations. So it is quite a process.
Sure. Well, yeah. And then you need local approval as well, right?
And you need local zoning approval.
Exactly.
And I was reading an article
special
about
permits.
Exactly. Yeah.
What were some of the mistakes, Devin, that you made along the way that you learned from?
So I'll tell you, originally, so we're in Newton right now,
mm-hmm.
the city of Newton. We're the city of Newton's first and still only operating social equity business. We were the first black-owned cannabis business in the city of Newton as well. We were originally going to end up in the town of Middleborough. That was our first location that we saw. So down there, this guy had 75 acres of land, and he was going to build a cannabis-style campus, like a Silicon Valley, right? So he gave us 2,100 square feet of space. We went before the Board of Selectmen in Middleborough. We obtained a host community agreement. And then once we did all that, this guy wanted us to sign a 10-year lease. And he was going to give us only shell space, right? It was hollowed out. He was going to be the general contractor on the project, and we couldn't bid it out to anybody else. So I did not sign that. But, you know, some people, they're just so eager, right? Yes. They don't, like, sometimes, you know, rational thinking is overclouded because you just want to go where anybody will take you in. Everyone gets so damn hard to get all those things to line up. Thankfully, you know, we didn't, you know, get stuck to that, get anchored down. Finding Newton was good, but in terms of business, so in terms of licensing process, nobody's perfect, but I think, like, think we did a good job. But in terms of operational, so being delivery, being a non-storefront, what I would 100% have done differently off the rip was work on SEO. SEO and digital marketing is everything for
SEO.
Us. Search engine optimization. Yeah. You know, how, like, do you pop up first when people type into Google cannabis delivery, weed delivery near me? We did not focus on that. We got a lot of hype, you know, because we were in the news all the time.
Yes.
You know, like, we formed the LLC in 2020. I've been on the news every year ever since. Before we even sold a single gram of cannabis, we were on the news. So I thought that was enough, right? I did. I foolishly thought, I'm like, people know who we are, man. People see, we're on the news all the time. People, just because people in the cannabis community know who we are, doesn't mean people in the actual community know who we are. And those are the people who are our target audience, because people in the cannabis community already have their own cannabis. They're not buying from us most of the time. You know, they will once or twice to support us, but they're not going to be a constant customer like an average human being, citizen would. So once we, you know, worked with an SEO specialist, you know, we saw it turn around. Like, our hours are from noon to 9 p.m. Like, when we started out, there'd be times where we didn't get a single order till 5 o'clock. And that would be the only order all day.
Okay.
It drove me crazy. Insane, some might even say. And so I have to drive back from Newton to Quincy. It's a 30-minute drive. You know, that's a long time. Just think to yourself, just sitting there, no radio on, just whatever. And I, you know, willing to do whatever it took. You know, we got out in the street. But you have to have, you know, you have to be targeted audience, right? Because you have marketing restrictions. You have to make sure 85% of your audience is 21 years of age or above when you're marketing to them. So we thought to ourselves, where are there places like that? Breweries. So that's what we did. So we came up with the breweries. 85% of the audience is that. 100% of the time, 85% of the audience in the brewery is 21 years of age and above.
Right.
So what we did was we collaborated with a local brewery based in Braintree called Widowmaker Brewing. They now have a second location over in Brighton, close to us in Newton. And we came up with a collab IPA, terpene infused. Terpenes will give cannabis its flavor and aroma. And it's also a cousin of hops. They're all in the same family, hops being the main ingredient in beer.
Sure.
So you mix them together, you get what's known as like an entourage effect, right? All coming together to make this one awesome effect. And we called the IPA Welcome to Grassachusetts. And we made sure that we put a QR code to our menu on the side of the label on the can. So, and we did it when we had the, you know, we had the ability to decide where it got distributed to. So we made sure they went to liquor stores in places that we can deliver to, Medford, Brighton, Alston, Cambridge, and, you know, we made sure, because if you're buying that beer, you're 21 years old, right? So every person buying that beer is 21 years of age. So we really just have to get creative and really just be, and, you know, obviously the news interviews help, and really just getting out there. But, you know, it was very tough starting out, especially for delivery. You know, you're going to go through growing pains, you know, but you have to be able to just fight through that and have that tenacity.
Yeah. Right. So for you, Commissioner, it must be gratifying to hear Devin's story, you know, and to come through the process to where he is right now.
It sure is, because it sits there in regulation or in theory, but to see, put a face to it and to see a success story like Devin's, and that he shares his story and that he's overcome some hardships to get to where he is, because, you know, what was once illegal, mm-hmm. in federally still is, mm-hmm. but with marijuana prohibition, you know, a lot of folks had, there was collateral consequences. So now how do we help those folks, give them opportunity? Because when Devin wins, we all win, right? Mm-hmm. When he's doing well in the community and he's employing folks and he's got a thriving business, we all do well.
Yeah.
And I just want to add that, you know, also that the cannabis industry is still evolving. Even though it's been here 6 years now as adult use, it's still, because the first dispensary opened in the fall of 2018.
18, right, yeah.
And there were two, and the lines were like 2 to 3 miles long.
It had live news coverage. You know, what's going to happen when the dispensary opens?
And now we have about 350 retailers, as I said. So you don't have those lines.
Right.
But what you are reading about is that the industry, adult use, is almost $6 billion in sales since its inception. And if you combine it with medical, you're talking about $7 billion. Right now, which is a huge infusion in the Massachusetts economy into the Marijuana Regulation Fund, which goes back to benefit communities. But folks like Devin, licensees who reach out to commissioners, when the first cohort of commissioners, they had a big job, mm-hmm. right? A mm-hmm. new industry, a new agency, they had to create regulations. So they made them stricter, if you will, knowing that you could loosen if you wanted to mm-hmm. down the road. So Devin and a lot of the other delivery operators, couriers, have a regulation in place for a two-driver rule, meaning two registered agents have to be in the vehicle at all times. And the vehicle is highly regulated, right? There's body cams, there's manifests, there's GPS, there's, you know, cameras in the car. You can only carry X amount in product. But the two-driver rule was put because there was concerns around public safety. Mm-hmm. And out west, you know, things have happened. But they lobbied us, and they kept lobbying us. And then they kept lobbying us some more.
Being a pain in the neck, basically.
Right?
It's a three-year marathon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, what month was it? December? We put it on the agenda.
December 14th,
and,
to be exact.
Yes, and I met with many of you, as my counterparts did. And, you know, they demonstrated to us that there have really been no impact, negative impacts or incidents. And for me, I worked at, I was at the Worcester County Sheriff's Office. Mm. I was in the leadership team there before Governor Baker appointed me as the commissioner. So public safety is very near and dear to my heart.
Certainly.
So,
yeah.
You know, so we listened to a lot of licensees and then, you know, also listened to public safety officials. So Police Chief John Carmichael, who is on the Cannabis Advisory Board, who was on my working group around an OUI curriculum that I helped implement in the state of Massachusetts for young people about cannabis impairment. He wrote a letter in support of removing the two-driver rule down to one.
Okay.
So we voted in the affirmative, and now that we did, but we still have to write out the regulations and then promulgate it, and that's a process. But this is how the industry, it continues to evolve, and we learn as we go along because it is a nascent industry, and we learn from licensees as much as they learn from us, and that's why it's so important that we talk all the time and have that communication.
Yeah,
I think it's really important to have that. You know, before, you know, with the previous commissioners, when they first got established, it felt like they were on top of Mount Olympus. You couldn't reach them.
Is that right?
They were on a pedestal, and, you know, having one-on-one meetings with them was just not heard of.
Yes.
Right? You couldn't, and when they did public testimony for, you know, regulation reform, you never saw anything really get done. Mm. But now we have this new set of commissioners. You know, I know all of them. You know, they all know me. You know, they're all very personable. Mm. They all take the time out of their day to meet with us, to talk to us. And, you know, I want to take this opportunity right now to thank Commissioner Roy, because she was a deciding vote back in December. You know, if it wasn't for her, you know, that would have been squash, and it would have been dead, and, you know, delivery as we know it just wouldn't become feasible here in Massachusetts. So, you know, all delivery companies definitely owe Commissioner Roy a big thanks.
Devin.
The social equity program, is there a cap on the number of licenses? How do folks?
I'm very grateful for them as well, because in some states, such as Arizona, you know, they limited it to 25 for the whole state.
Well.
In other states, they do a lottery. Right?
Okay.
So that's even crazier.
Okay.
And, you know, that's room for more shadiness. So I'm very grateful for the state of Massachusetts for them not implementing a lottery and not implementing a cap.
Mm-hmm. Where there is a cap, though, currently, is that they can only have 2 licenses in delivery. But they also advocated to us that that's kind of restrictive in where other licensees can have 3. So we did vote to increase the cap from 2 to 3
okay.
on that license type.
Okay. How does one get into the social equity program of the Cannabis Control Commission?
Well, they have to just meet one of the criteria that right. Commissioner Roy alluded to.
And, I mean, is there a public process
yes.
hearing coming up?
So right now they're currently going city to city and hosting these. Mm-hmm. They went before.
Yes.
When I started out, that wasn't going on.
Okay.
But
right.
now here they are in the fourth cohort. You know, it's tough. You know, we were the first statewide social equity program.
Yes.
You know, nothing's going to be perfect the first time you do
right.
it. You know, so here they are in the fourth iteration of it. They're learning and they're improving on upon where they could improve mm-hmm. upon.
Okay.
Yeah. And so now I think one of their next ones, they did one in New Bedford, they did them in Worcester, they're going to be in Brockton, yep. going to be in Boston coming up.
Okay.
So, and then there's a lot of information online as well.
So, okay. Joe, I'm glad you asked because
yes.
This is, as Devin said, the fourth cohort, and the window to apply is as we speak.
Oh.
You can go to the commission's website, and there's a portal, there's a link you can click
okay.
to apply. I think it's like on the homepage when you get right there.
Yep.
And we share it on our social media platforms as well. We encourage folks to apply, but the window to apply is going to close on April 30th, 2024 for this cohort,
okay.
for cohort four. Now, hopefully next year at this time, there'll be a cohort five,
again,
and
right,
we will
yeah.
keep doing it.
Okay.
But the window, you know, is now. The
okay.
opportunity is right now.
Is there a cost to apply through that program?
No.
No.
Okay.
It's all free.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's another good benefit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your application fees get waived
okay.
when you apply. A non-social equity application.
Yeah.
It costs them like $1,500.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then your annual renewal fees get sliced in half as well. So
mm-hmm.
a general applicant will pay like $10,000 to get mm-hmm. their license renewed annually. A social mm-hmm. equity applicant pays $5,000.
And since it is such a highly regulated industry,
mm-hmm.
we track from seed to sale. And we have that program is called Metric. And most licensees, there's a lot of costs incurred, but some of the Metric fees are waived for folks like Devin
okay.
who have to have plants tagged from seed to sale,
yes.
and it has to be put into the system, and we monitor it, the lifespan of the
product.
Plant.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
okay. MassCannabisControl.com is the main website
mm-hmm.
To go to folks to learn more. Anything else you'd like to add right now? There's so much to this industry
there,
and to the regulation and to the process.
Yeah. What I will say is, and thank you for having us
sure.
on. It was so great to be here with Devin. Is that you know this industry is still evolving,
mm-hmm.
and there are things that folks will come to us and that it falls outside of our jurisdiction. Some things are a regulatory fix. That's us. When it's a legislative fix, well, that's
your state
house.
Rep. Yeah.
That's your state rep.
Okay.
But then some things are federal fix, and that's completely out of our jurisdiction.
That's your congressman.
And you can talk to your congressman.
Right.
So it's multifaceted, and hopefully, you know, and I feel personally, I'm in the public health seat, that the future of cannabis is directly proportional to research. And because of the federal illegality, there's just not enough public investment into the plant is thousands of years old, but the medical research has not kept up. Imagine learning that it's efficacious for this or that, and think about what that would do for Devin's business if folks knew that it helped here or there for that comorbidity or, and we need to learn more because that will benefit everyone. It'll benefit consumers, it'll benefit patients, the medical society, the licensees. So research is critically important. I'll continue to advocate. I hope Massachusetts, with our universities and our life sciences and our hospitals, could be a global leader in research. And I really hope to see that someday. So for me, that's really a driving force.
Okay. Devin, do you see yourself being a teacher in this industry in one day?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I've recently worked with students at Boston University in terms
yeah.
of marketing and, you know, just global and rural business, you know. And I could talk about cannabis all day, you know, in educational forms and recreational forms,
mm-hmm.
for sure. You know, I'm someone, it's my calling, you know. I generally wholly believe this is what I was put on earth to do, was work in cannabis. You know, it's given me purpose in life to have this industry that's legalized and it's not as stigmatized. You know, there's still some work we need to do. And, you know, I just want to say to everybody out here, you know, watching that's against cannabis, it's here to stay. You know, cannabis industry isn't going anywhere. If you use cannabis, you're not a bad person. You know, the whole just say no, we have a lot of years of miseducation to undo. And that happens through community. Not one single person can do that. You know, the collaboration, being out there and just having the willingness to teach, but also the willingness to learn.
Well, thanks for sharing your story. I'm sorry, Commissioner.
Yeah, I was gonna say, he's being modest too, because honestly, you know, teaching, that's great with the students, but he really is a mentor and a role model to a lot of folks aspiring to get into the industry. Mm-hmm. He's really a public face. He's willing to, not everybody's willing to share their story. And Devin's willing to do that, and he, you know, he's been really successful. So I want to thank him for that, and let's just keep moving forward.
All right. Well, thank you both. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. Thanks for watching us here at AM Quincy. I'm Joe Catalano. We'll see you next time.